You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, Francis Albert, third hour, Wake Up Tucson. I'm going to tell you, Matt and I have eaten many a beef rib in our day. The beef rib costilla that Juan Almanza served us today as part of America's Best Mexican Food Visit Tucson El Taco Rustico series, I'm going to say, is the best beef rib I have eaten in my life. And I don't say these things lightly.
I could not argue with that.
Perfectly cooked, yeah. Rendered, seasoned. Mm-hmm.
The flavor was just phenomenal.
I mean, there's a lot of beef ribs.
It's perfect.
It just gets the...
That's what all beef ribs aspire to.
It's true. It's very true.
Yeah, well, it was really good. I mean, just remarkably good. Yeah.
Let's go to the education czar of the Goldwater Institute, Matt Beinberg's back on the show. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
And unlike the border czar, he actually does good work in his field as the education czar. Just want to let everyone know that. So, Matt, ESAs, Empowerment Scholarship. You know, it's interesting. I just saw an article in the Republico this morning that, of course, they say that somehow in ESA enrollments are down a little bit. And, of course, the Republic thinks that's great. But where are we at on the reality of how many parents are taking advantage of this?
Sure. So there were about 75,000 parents who were on the program through this school year that just ended. ADE, the Department of Education that administers the program, has on their website sort of a current count. And it shows about 67,000 students, which kind of looks like a dip. But then, as they note, there are over 10,000 students in one part of the renewal process and 12,000 in another. So they're still kind of going through that paperwork as families are filling out those contracts. So, yeah, we've seen folks on the left try to say, oh, well, look at this. The program must not be popular suddenly. You know, they've been complaining that too many kids are on it for the last year and a half and now, you know, suggesting otherwise. But, yeah, continuing to see tens of thousands of families who are benefiting from this program and with many geared up for this next year as well.
And how much does ESA pay out we'll do this. We're going to do this dog and pony one more time. How much money does it cost to do an ESA?
So an ESA gives a typical family about $7,500. Again, that's funds that they can use for private school tuition, at-home curricula, and all sorts of, tutoring, teaching services to really help with the education of their child. And as we've talked about, the public school system, the average spending is north of $14,000 a year. And even when you make all these adjustments, the other side says, well, you shouldn't count that expense because that was from money that you paid as a federal taxpayer. You know, in my mind, that still counts. Or this is money you paid as a state sales taxpayer instead of, local property taxes. They try to play all these games. But the ESA program costs thousands of dollars less per child than it would to send a kid to the public school system. But we still hear from the left that this is somehow damaging to the economy, damaging to the state, and harmful to taxpayers.
If you did just whatever the state revenue was for sending a kid to a K-12 government school, what are we talking about?
Yeah, so the JLBC, the official nonpartisan budget analysts, every year come out with a lot of statistics, and they show that as of this last year, it was about $12,200 of funding from state and local taxes together, because those kind of get intertwined through the formula. So $12,200 versus about $7,500. That's an average number. So you have some cases where that's more, some cases where it's less. But in virtually every single case in the state, it's going to be thousands of dollars less, hundreds or thousands of dollars less than the public schools are going to essentially charge taxpayers for that same student.
I don't know if you know this number off the top of your head. You may. How many K through 12 students total are there in the state of Arizona?
There's a little over a million. So there's just over a million students who are in public schools. About 250,000 of those are in public charter schools, which are independently operated. They're not run by a school district. So, a lot of the big names that we're familiar with, things like BASIS or Great Hearts or American Leadership Academy.
Right.
A lot of these very successful public charter schools, which interestingly, the left had demonized and attacked. The Arizona Republic for years was gunning for these schools to somehow say that these are K terrible and trying to suggest fraud and all this stuff. And of course, even, you know, major institutions like Stanford actually have come out in the last year and said, when you look at the data, they actually outperform the district schools. They cost less funding. And yet we've seen the same. So all the attacks against the ESA program today are really just a rehash of what we've seen of the establishment pushing back on other forms of school choice in the past. But now they've, I think, sort of resigned themselves to the fact that they're not going anywhere. They're established. Parents like them. They're successful. They help kids, and they frankly cost less funding, less money than the public school system run through the districts.
So tell me how Attorney General Chris Mays is trying to subvert the ESA program.
Well, you know, it's no shock that we've obviously heard from the left attempts to unwind or destroy or dismantle this program, you know, for years. And in the last couple of years, the governor has put out in her budget proposal attempts to roll back or dismantle this program, and, you know, essentially wanting to defund it, kick every kid who's in that program out of it. And that's something that the conservative lawmakers have essentially said, under no circumstance are we doing this, right? They are the democratically elected representatives. They have passed this legislation. They have created this opportunity for thousands of kids. During the budget negotiations this year, the left was trying to still force them to rip this program out or to hamstring it. And the conservative lawmakers, again, essentially said, we're not doing that. They made some reforms to the program. But what was clear is the left was not satisfied with what they did. And so even though they didn't get their way in the legislative process, what you now see is an attempt to essentially short circuit the program by waging what amounts to, you know, sort of legal warfare against it. And so the Attorney General sent a letter to the Arizona Department of Education, who are the ones who actually administer the program. And that's you know, run by State Superintendent Tom Horn, who is himself elected by the people. And the Attorney General comes in here and basically sends them a demand letter threatening them and saying, we have a different interpretation of statute that, under our view of it, you're not allowed to use these ESA funds for all these things that parents have been allowed to use them for, including things like books, workbooks, you know, basic supplies, and saying, if you allow them to do this, we think you are breaking the law and you are personally liable. So not only trying to revise the law and then essentially threaten personal liability against the superintendent and his staff if they don't go along with them.
Wow. Wow. So you guys sent the classic Goldwater letter to the crew?
We did. You know, our attorneys, you know, looked at this and you know, laid out, here's the clear statutes that are here. Here's the statutory history. You can see over the years, the legislature has proactively taken steps to actually increase the ability of families to use this program. You know, the ESA program in Arizona was the first in the nation. So in 2011, when it first came online, it was the first time this had ever been done. You know, the language, of course, was able to help kids, but it's something that over the last decade has been broadened and expanded to ensure that, you know, families may choose private school or they may have, you know, the desire for flexible learning options in different places. And so they've gone in there and said, yes, you can use this for curriculum. Yes, you can use this for supplemental materials. And what we've seen over the years are parents, again, with the approval of the departments of education, including whether run by a Democrat or a Republican, who have allowed these types of expenses, because the legislature has, again, signaled fairly clearly in what they have passed. The intent of the program is that it's the family who is using this funds for the education of their kid, not a bureaucrat or the attorney general to come in here and start demanding, you know, something like, oh, this book is going to be allowed or this one isn't, just because you found me a piece of paper that we think is good enough for this. I mean, it's the overstep on this from a policy perspective is really just extraordinary, right? This is not something that is the attorney general's lane. And essentially coming in here and usurping authority to say, I'm the one that's going to make the calls about how this program should be implemented, even though multiple state departments of education and the State Board of Education have all looked at this. The legislature has had ample opportunity to make changes if they don't think it's being administered correctly. And in spite of all of this, yeah, we see the attorney general coming out and essentially trying to bully the department and parents into submission on this.
Tell me any response from anybody on this?
So, you know, we put out this letter here, and it's going to be going through the process. And, you know, the Department of Education has indicated they're working to try to find, you know, ways that they can help accommodate parents on this. And so it's a situation where institutionally you have the AG, which really is supposed to be the legal representation for the state, sort of turning on itself here to do that. And so we're hopeful that there will be, you know, some adjustments here that we can help you know, facilitate. And at the end of the day, obviously, yes, Goldwater is always prepared to defend the rights of parents through litigation as necessary as well.
My last question for you, because people always say that elections have consequences. If the Republicans blow two or three of these legislative races, we might possibly lose the legislature to the Democrats. What would be the first thing they would go after and dismantle?
Well, if you do end up with a legislature where, you know, currently there's a conservative majority who is pro-school choice, if that were to flip and you were to have a majority of those who are opposed to it, there would be nothing standing in the way of the program as it is now and the program being dismantled as the governor has called for and as a lot of those lawmakers have called for. So depending on whether or not, you know, they have the votes to do that, if they were to have a majority, they could, through statute, roll back that entire program, or what seems to be one of their favorites is, you know, the sort of death by a thousand cuts. Even if they weren't to shut it down, to try to do things to essentially now do a takeover where they're essentially saddling private schools or families with such ridiculous regulations. You know, they had proposed, the governor proposed price controls, literally taking over the tuition setting process of private schools if they wanted to be eligible for the ESA funding this year. Stuff like that, where it would literally be a takeover of these programs if they want to use the funds. And so even if they weren't to shut it down, through changes like that, they could essentially drive off parents and schools and essentially have this program just wither. And so the stakes very much, if, you know, for folks who are concerned about the rights of parents and school choice, you know, couldn't be more clear when it comes to making sure that there are folks who support this. And that message is made clear to, you know, to lawmakers that this needs to be a priority for parents.
Matt, just ask you. Matt's got a question for you, real quick.
Is there any sign? I mean, I know the program's relatively new. Right. Is there any sign that public schools have responded by upping their game? I mean, you know, you inject competition, and the idea is, I mean, that you can fight it administratively, or you can just do better. Is there any sign that public schools are responding in any sort of positive way?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it is, you know, still obviously early to kind of see where they're going. But the parallel for this, again, as I kind of mentioned, are public charter schools, where the same thing, right? The infusion of competition. And I actually had a conversation with the former superintendent of one of the largest districts in the state. And I remember him telling me, yeah, when the charter schools took off, it forced us to up our game, because they recognized if they're not a monopoly and they actually have to compete with other providers on quality and education, they have to do better. And so I think we've already seen that story play out once with the charter school sector. And I think that is what we're going to be seeing with the private school choice, homeschool abilities, as more families are able to take advantage of the ESA program. I think these schools are going to increasingly recognize if they don't up their game, they're going to continue to lose.
I think the leftist majority at TUSD down here, when talking to the governor's people or Dem state legislators, they're just telling them, wait till we take the legislative vote, you'll be fine. Just have patience. We'll take over the legislature, and you don't have to worry about this, and you can keep sucking. I think that's where they're at. So, Feinberg,
I think they're, you know, we've seen from groups like Save Our Schools Arizona that have essentially just become, you know, campaign arms of one of the major political parties. I mean, that essentially is what it has boiled down to. So, yeah, I think that's probably right.
Matt Feinberg, you're the man. Love what you do. Keep being on that wall, as Jack Nicholson would say, and have an amazing weekend, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You as well.
There is the great Matt Feinberg from Goldwater. He's watching out for all this academic freedom stuff. We love what he does. Very smart young man. He's the best education advocate in America. 8:21 in the morning. We're running late. Wake up, Tucson. So if you look on Facebook, I have a picture of the platter of food.
Oh, man.
Brought. And Kane put, to all the chefs in town, this is how you plate. Not the tiny piece of meat in the middle of a white plate with a radish in the corner and some other crap along the edges. You know, and I put it on Facebook, too. I want to know from my restaurant friends, is this one of the worst summers for business in quite a while? I keep hearing that repeatedly over and over and over again. I'm just saying, if you're not serving booze at your restaurant too, tough, very tough. And there are beloved restaurants that you love in this town that their owners have told me if they didn't serve beer and some other things, they would not be profitable selling the food that you love so much. This is where we're at. So the margins are so crazy thin.
As prices go up, something's got to give. It's been waiting for it for a while because people have still been pumping money into the economy. But eventually something's got to give, right?
Like I'm telling you, man, that guy Jake Munoz from Say's Kitchen coming on Channel 4 or 9 a couple days ago and saying I'm repricing my stuff constantly because of the cost of food, right? And he said that I noticed that one of my my burritos was getting up to $20 for a burrito, and that's ridiculous. A listener question from anonymous listener: aren't ESAs proving the most popular education innovation in decades? Of course they are, right? But again, I know a lot of my libertarian friends are on these ESAs are very wary of them because when you take money from the government like that, there'll always be strings attached, and depending who's in power, what do those strings look like?
What's the biggest argument they have? Oh, Star Wars Lego set. I mean, that's the nature of their argument back about this, that people are they found a few isolated incidents.
I will tell you that they, you know, so the answer I always hear back on that is one Star Wars Lego set for $300 compared to the millions of dollars in fraud, waste, and loss in these other government schools.
Or 20% literacy.
Or running a high school called Santa Rita that has 240 kids, even though it's built for 2,000. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Little Boz for Matt on the East Side. It is amazing that a guy who literally 21 days ago was the debate.
Yeah.
21 days ago.
Okay.
Was sharp as a tack.
So says he.
And now, because of his true, they've revealed his true mental capacity, which all of us knew, which is that of a rutabaga, right? That he's got to go. It's the best.
It's just something else.
The gaslight, one of the greatest global gaslightings ever. It makes 6 foot distance and masks look tame. Before I run out of time, I got to go to Deborah. We got the Tom Mortonoff coming up later on. We talk about mouse and squirrel, and now we go to Deborah Benini.
Wake up, Vladivostok.
Deborah Benini. She's a retired Pima County Superior Court judge. Deborah Benini. This column is bellissimo, bellissimo. Grind the pepper. Judge Deborah Benini. All elections are important, but we as a community have one coming up that will affect all of Pima County in a primary election for Pima County attorney between Laura Conover and Mike Jetty. Now, what's interesting is I just read you the one yesterday of Laura's former diversion program manager talking about how, I mean, this lady is obviously from the left, but she can't stand Laura Conover. Said ignored her, took her 2 years, couldn't even get a meeting with her. She's a diversion program manager. Okay. Also, we got to look at for a name for the reality show. I need the reality show name: Conover, Wadsack, Carrie Lake, and Rahina Romero on a road trip together. What do we call that? So, keep working on that. All right, back to Judge Benini. No, that was Barzini in The Godfather. This is Benini. Both candidates have enthusiastic support, but there's something missing in many letters and opinion pieces I've been reading, which is the reality of what Ms. Conover's tenure has already brought to Pima County. It has not been good. I retired in 2023 after 29 years on the bench. Prior to that, I served as public defender when the county attorney was Steve Neely. just like Matt's last name. Conspiracy. I already smell conspiracy here. Steve Neely, Matt Neely. I've never seen them both at the same place, Steve and Matt. Just let everyone know.
It's true.
When I became a Superior Court judge, the county attorney was run by Barbara LaWall. I found many of her policies to be harsh, so I was hopeful that a new county attorney could bring positive change. Now, remember, so Judge Bernitti thought Barbara LaWall was harsh? Wow. But let's go on. When I heard that Laura Conover would be running, I was at a loss. This is pretty damning stuff by Judge Bernitti. Why was she interested in being the county attorney? She had little experience as a criminal defense lawyer and nothing as a prosecutor. None of my colleagues could actually recall her trying a jury trial in their courtrooms. This was all conveniently forgotten 4 years ago when they elected her. So, no little experience as a defense lawyer and nothing as a prosecutor, none of Judge Bernini's colleagues could recall her trying a jury trial in their courtrooms. While we were told she was bringing a retired presiding Superior Court judge on board to advise her, which sounded good, that never happened.
Come on. You are fake news.
She brought a friend who is a former public defender and law professor. None of them knew how to manage a prosecutor's office. Many of us were intrigued when Conover ran on a progressive platform, as it certainly meant dramatic change. But I knew from experience that what sounds in theory or looks good in writing usually has little to do with reality. Stop prosecuting drug cases and use treatment alternatives. End cash bail and release more defendants on their own recognizance. Reduce more felonies to misdemeanors. It sounded good to many, but when the reality hit, it hit hard. I oversaw many criminal cases in my years as a judge, but something was amiss the last 4 years that I served. You got to listen. This is unbelievably important to understand the Conover thing. It started with mass releases of felony drug offenders. Then persons accused of burglaries, robberies, domestic violence, and even aggravated assaults were routinely released at their initial appearances without objection. Defendants who 5 years earlier would have been held at the custody at the request of the county attorney due to their criminal record or nature of offense or repeated failures to appear were now being released. Defendants who in the past might have had one felony case and only allowed release when there were services in place or guarantees they would appear in court were coming before me with three or four or five different pending cases, then not appearing at all, so that a warrant had to be issued. The decision to release repeatedly was a result of the sheriff desperately wanting to reduce the jail population. I'm telling you, this is where the Conover-Nanos combo is deadly to the community. So here's Judge Bernitti saying that decision to release repeatedly was the result of a sheriff desperately wanting to reduce jail population. The court's progressive embrace of funding that promoted quick release of low-level drug offenders, that's MacArthur Foundation, and most of all because Laura Conover's promise to her electorate to treat criminals differently. That turned into catch and release. For all of us who have been victims of burglaries from our cars and yards, imagine being told the person responsible was out on release for committing the same offense seven times before. Do you ever wonder why the police response is so slow for what are deemed low-level crimes? Why would an officer be instantly set out for a property crime if the result would be the perpetrator would be released again and again and again and then probably not be prosecuted? I mean, everything Judge Bernini hears, everything, it just ties up everything that's so horrible about Laura Conover. Okay? During the height of reduce the jail population craze, I started getting motions to release from defense attorneys asking the clients be released on their own recognizance and further stating the county attorney stipulated to their motion. Stipulated? Question mark. Lawyers can agree on many things, but the decision to release someone into community is a decision left to the judge. These are not drugs, right?
Right.
Right. They had
That's a great point.
They're saying that they were stipulated to their motion by Conover. These were not drug possession cases. These were domestic violence and aggravated assaults and other serious cases. I would turn to the prosecutor and let them know with just a look that a stipulated release was not happening. Afterwards, many of the prosecutors would come to chambers saying that they understood how unhappy I was, but they wanted to keep their jobs. They had been given directives to go along with release in many cases, even if they disagreed with it. Now, this ties back to everything we just talked about. We had Renee Page, the domestic violence person, lady who wrote an op-ed. The Benitez family that was here talking about Isaac. The people that went to that press conference in front of the county attorney that Laura Conna basically accused were a bunch of easily duped dumbasses. Judge Bernini is bringing it all together here. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I told them that if they were torn, that they say their office, they should say that their office took no position, but not to ever usurp the judge's duty to ensure the safety of the community. I know Jetty from many trials. He tried in my courtroom as assistant attorney general. He was professional, ethical, compassionate, shared his skills with law students. In contrast, I've had over a dozen attorneys from Conover's office stop by my chambers to talk in private about their concerns with the chaotic and confusing directives they're given by Conover. They're worried about their ethical duties and ask for advice. Many end up leaving, and some found a way to stay and survive. But terrific lawyers, both experienced and new, left her office in droves. There were not enough prosecutors left to handle the caseloads responsibly. I was not the only judge who worried about being forced to dismiss a homicide case because there was not a prosecutor ready to take the case to trial within the time limits mandated by law. We've heard about that with Laura and the crew are masters of slow justice. Okay. Why would Jetty be different? From my firsthand dealings with him, he has compassion, common sense, knows how to manage others. He has prosecutorial experience that puts him light years ahead of Conover, and he would be welcomed by the hardworking attorneys of the county attorney's office who now would have a reason to stay. In the end, all I wanted were two things: to feel safe in my community, and have a prosecutor in my courtroom. Under Laura Conover, I have neither. Now, when you read that, Ron Barber and Nina Trasoff sound like total, inept, duped jackasses. The very jackasses that dupe jackasses that Laura Conover accuses the victims that spoke out in public. I mean, think about this. She, Renee Page, a domestic violence survivor, right, is literally put into that easily duped category by Conover. So what I'd like to know with her buddies, the supermamas, badass supermamas, Rahina Marrow and Adelita Grijalva, is it right for your buddy to basically call victims of crimes, including a domestic violence survivor, basically easily duped? I thought the sisterhood should be like on the same side as a female who survived domestic violence. Call me crazy. All right. When we come back, we got some names for the show?
Just a couple. Okay, just to tie back.
Give me a wrap up, Matt.
Tie back to the Conover, the unholy alliance of Conover and Nanos.
Yep.
So they get rid of what they deem, you know, the less violent criminals or the less dangerous criminals. So now the jail's full, but now the mix is much more serious criminals. The mix of the jail population.
Right.
On top of this, Nanos gets rid of a bunch of sheriffs with his vaccine nonsense and this and that, right? And the Board of Supervisors, you know, help lead that parade. So they're short on guards. So you have more dangerous criminals, senior guards gone. Now you got 19-year-olds, 18-year-olds with a couple weeks or a couple months on the job getting attacked by a criminal, which did happen.
Yep. And they're dragging experienced sheriff deputies off of the streets to work the jail.
Right. So, I mean, it's like a snowball. It just goes downhill. It gets bigger and bigger. And the problem is obvious. You just need to make some changes.
Great job by Judge Bernini here, where she really ties together maybe she didn't even know she did it. But all the things that have come out from victims and attorneys and all these folks about what a train wreck Conover and Nanos are all came together on this.
Yeah.
And Ron, I almost want to go back and read the Ron Barber piece again, because he'll sound, once you hear that, the Ron Barber piece sounds like a bigger jackass than ever. You know, Caitlin Schmidt did a story about today on the agenda thing about, you know, who's donating to who in this race. And then she says, who's paying what? Caitlin, I know I'm the quote right wing shock jock, but look into Brink Media. This one's another easy one. The father of the TUSD Tucson High rapist owns his partner in Brink Media and has made tens of thousands of dollars from Laura's campaign. And Brink Media did some sort of Washington, D.C. fundraiser for her. It's right there. Go find it. Use Google, for God's sakes, Caitlin. You're one of the better ones.
Like you were saying in the first hour, the stories are here.
Ugh.
You can have a career out of it. Or a 15-year show.
Woo. Remember, I'm in a great position here. The better position is everyone proves me wrong and life gets better for everybody. Prove me wrong. Make me wrong. Make things better that I don't have to talk about this anymore and life gets better. That's the ultimate win. Tom Murtanov from Jump in Tucson coming up next with Garden Person to Honochul. Wake up, Tucson. So I put up on my on the old Wastebooker page about I said, question for my restaurant fans, friends. Sound like Bobby Boucher. Hi, friends. You're wrong, Colonel Sanders. Anyway, question for my restaurant friends. Is this one of the worst summers for business in a while? And I told them to direct message me if you don't want that out there. So Raina at Shish Kebab, yes, indeed. I personally, then I have people who just said it's hard for them to eat out anymore. Two of my other ones just said yes. One of the other ones that DM me, I can't say who it is, but it's basically talking about they've kept a high profile, so summer has been pretty good. They do a lot of good marketing, but that's not what I'm hearing from other restaurateurs. And this is something that Ackerley and I have talked about. Dave Slabin and I have done shows on this. Is even as you're going into perceived slow times, you should keep your marketing. Because what we always see is they keep up their marketing when things are better in the cooler weather. And then they're like, I've done such an amazing job. They're gotta hang out with me on a 108 degree day in July. And that's not the way it works. Sad to say. Always be marketing. Someone said for my show, my reality show, Conover, Wadsack, Carrie Lake, and Raheena Romero on a road trip. Thelma and Louise times two. We got that. But I don't want anyone running over a cliff either. That's not my bag on this. I just want them to go through a thing. Matt, what have you had suggestions?
Well, we got Al called in, Road to Nowhere, with the theme from The Talking Edge.
That's not bad.
Lost
not
in America, bad. That's kind of one.
Lost. So I saw some some spitballing with the word sisterhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sistering of the sisterhood, because the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants is the book and then subsequent movie. Because what I want is there's the sisterhood. I like that. They're traveling, and then at the same time, none of them take any account of. There's no humility, and they take no blame for anything. The sisterhood of the traveling vanity. There's something we're missing here. Well, we'll get there. Hey, Matt, I don't know if you have it handy.
My Way or the Highway?
Matt and I are going to be teaching the next couple of shows, so
right,
we won't be here.
Which.
What do you have the semi list handy of what's going to be played on Monday or Friday? I should have done this at the pre-show.
Monday,
yeah,
we're going to start off with Don Dickinson. He was speaking. It was D-Day. He was speaking about, right?
Yep.
And then Lori and Amanda Oyen speaking about D-Day and their visit to the 80th anniversary of D-Day.
Right? Yep.
And then we have Danny Sawaya and Josh.
Hannah from
Thank you.
Caring Ministries.
Yeah, and talking about some very important issues. Monday, we'll have a double shot of Dan Shearer. And then Vince Leach will be on in the 7 o'clock hour. And Italian accents.
Ah!
Gone wild in the 8 o'clock hour.
God bless us all. Everyone, have a great weekend. We'll see you on Tuesday, believe
see
it or not.
See you on Election Day, Chris.
Absolutely. Tom Moulton is here with Jamie from Tohono O'Toole.